chair recognizes Thomas Jefferson.
What about me?
Fuck you, Gwinnett!
Who let you in here?
Gentlemen, about this flag business, a nation is its flag. And I will not stand by while some group of ye olde performance artists defecates upon it. Ideas?
Mr. Franklin.
Can't we just put the flag up on a pole where no one could get to it?
Lunacy! How would we ever get it down?
Let's make it against the law for human beings to touch the flag.
How would we carry it around?
Well, all flags will be transported by monkeys. Monkeys don't shit on anything.
Visit the zoo, Gwinnett.
Oh, no. What if we have only one flag and it's locked in a safe?
What if people make counterfeit copies of the flag and desecrated those?
Well, that's simple. We don't tell anyone what it looks like.
Gentlemen! What a collection of assholes.
All right, listen. I made this flag. It worked great. People shit all over it.
You idiot.
The opposite is what we want, my dear Button.
What smells?
Oh, my perfect flag. It's made of shit. Oh. Gentlemen, who would shit on a flag made of shit? It would be an empty gesture.
Recorded live from Pennsylvania and Nebraska, U.S. of A. It's the Bob and Elvis Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Elvis Dingledean.
Everybody's saying I should run for president. Let me ask you a question. Meatloaf, should I run for president?
Absolutely.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality.
Absolutely.
The Bob and Elvis Show.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Was that Mr. Show?
That was Mr. Show. That was one of my favorite sketches from Mr. Show. And I got to thinking about it because, you know, there's been a lot of analysis flying around, at least our circle of the blogosphere, with regards to Glenn Greenwald. Mm-hmm. And there was a... Ches Pazienza posted something the other day about Glenn. He's actually been posting several things about Glenn, sort of analyzing what makes Glenn Greenwald tick. And so the, you know, conversation on BobSeska.com on our blog, you know, sort of revolved around Greenwald's knowledge of the Constitution. At least that's what it's the comments kind of devolved to that. And I had mentioned earlier today in the comments that while he may have this stellar knowledge of constitutional law, he doesn't. The thing with Greenwald is he doesn't quite understand that the Constitution itself and all of the United States was founded upon the idea of compromise.
Oh, yeah. From the get-go. Even the Declaration of Independence.
Right. It was all based on compromise, and what...
Yeah, if we were an absolutist polity, if we had an absolutist party of on either side, we never would have gotten past 1776.
That's right. And what ended up coming out of all of that is a form of government that is very slow moving.
Yeah. It's representative. But malleable, yeah, and flexible.
That's right. It's
the whole point of our republic is how bendy it is, like a bendy straw.
It's a representative democracy. And then you have three branches of government who all have to play nice together. And there's a bureaucracy. There's lots of things. There's lots of big, cumbersome moving parts to the United States government. And so, therefore, you cannot have instantaneous change.
No, or just down the line, you know, hard-ass, it's my way or the highway legislation. Yeah. It just doesn't work that way.
Now, I have softened a little bit on my stance with regards to Greenwald. Of course, I've had ongoing issues with Greenwald. I think the way he's, you know, it's one thing to hold our leadership accountable, but it's another thing to be stupid about it and self-defeating about it, which I think oftentimes happens on the firebagger left.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think Greenwald and Jane Hampshire and some of those guys are the culprits behind this kind of screechy accountability, which eventually becomes loud noises and no one pays attention to loud noises. Least of all, this president. I mean, there's nothing in the history of this president's career in politics that indicates that he responds at all to just screaming loud noises constantly.
Until this week. Until just the other day. Yeah. Until long-form birth certificate. That's the ultimate cave to loud noises. Yeah. I'm not happy about that at all.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that in a second.
I don't understand the but back to Mr. Show. When he says, fuck you, Button, he's talking about Button Gwinnett.
Yeah,
who is one of the five signers that I'm related to. So I was very excited.
And it was Button Gwinnett who made a flag in this sketch. He makes a flag with a toilet on it with the word America printed on the side of the toilet. And he says, people shit all over it. He says, Button, you idiot. That's not what we were going for.
That's just one of the reasons I love that show is that they chose to make what's-his-face Button Gwinnett of all the representatives there at the time, they made him Button Gwinnett, which I just love. So I'm descended from Button Gwinnett of Georgia, Thomas Stone of Maryland, Francis Lightfoot Lee of Virginia, Benjamin Harrison of Virginia, who was the grandfather of the first Harrison president, who was the grandfather of the second Harrison president, two of the worst presidents ever, and I'm related to them, and Robert Tree Payne, I'm a directly descendant from Robert Tree Payne, Massachusetts. So.
Now, were there two Lightfoots? I thought Lightfoot was Lightfoot Harry Lee, or maybe that's
I don't think he was in the, I think there were, that whole Lee clan, the Lees basically founded Virginia. They're one of the founding families, the Lees. There were just a shit ton of Lees. There was Richard Henry Lee was the other one at the convention. At least at the Declaration, the Declaration of Independence. But there were the whole colonial, it was shit just rife with Lees.
One of my favorite things about that sketch is they threw in Lincoln. Lincoln is one of the founding fathers there, played by the voice of SpongeBob, Tom Kenny.
Yeah.
And he, for no reason in particular, other than the fact that they were all high as a kite writing that show, is Lincoln's got a Guido accent. He's like,
how don't we know this? Yeah.
How will they get it down?
This is one of the funniest shows ever.
Really?
So ahead of its time and so really unappreciated.
Is. Yeah.
In its time.
Hey, Meatloaf, was Mr. Show the funniest show of all time? Meatloaf, excuse me, Meatloaf.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
An idiot. Big, sweaty, doughy Meatloaf.
But yeah, I mean, I wanted to emphasize with that sketch and dovetail it into a brief conversation about Greenwald that, you can't have a knowledge of the Constitution without really understanding and grasping how it actually came to be.
Yeah.
And how that process actually informs what happens today. And so there was a piece, and it's linked from Chez's site. It's deusexmalcontent.com. Which is Chez's site. And I wish I had the link at my disposal right here, but there's an analysis of Greenwald and some information that I didn't know about him, which I didn't know he's gay and that he has a partner. And
you didn't know Greenwald was gay?
I didn't
even
know Greenwald.
Twitter icon to tell you that, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, I had no idea. But super gay. Yeah. And that's why he lives in Rio, because his partner is Brazilian and they have immigration.
Brazilian.
Yeah. They have
Brazilian.
Right, they have immigration issues. So they're married in Brazil, but because of United States immigration and the gay marriage laws here, they can't move to the United States. They can't.
I don't know. That makes me think that maybe his partner is HIV positive, because that's the real immigration issue, which has just recently been lifted under Obama, the whole ban against importing HIV in with immigrants, which is so fucking retarded.
Which you would never know reading Greenwald's blog.
No.
So, no. I mean, and that's the issue. I mean, that's the problem. And that, Chez started a conversation in which he's comparing Greenwald to someone like Paul Krugman, who I very much respect. I mean, Paul Krugman criticizes the president. Paul Krugman is in fact, he's extremely critical of President Obama, but he gives the president credit where credit is due. Krugman understands the political process, I think, a little more than Greenwald does, or at least he knows that it is what it is.
He appreciates political realism. Yeah. And he has an appreciation for it.
And so,
which Greenwald just doesn't seem to understand how anything works.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think this piece also detailed about how Greenwald is and his fatal flaw is that he's expecting these changes to happen instantly, and that he's for example, one thing he wants to do is Greenwald has expressed support for a Republican candidate for president.
Who did the what now?
Gary Johnson. Greenwald is supporting Gary Johnson.
Oh, my God. For president. Nice.
And Gary Johnson. Oh,
good luck with that, Greenwald.
I mean, Gary Johnson is pro-gay, which is, I think, one of the reasons why Greenwald supports him. But he's looking to disrupt the two-party system is what he wants to do, which is, again, kind of flies in the face of how the country was founded. And
I wouldn't say that. I mean, I think the country was absolutely founded on a let's not do political parties kind of thing. I mean, even up through John Adams was virulently against political parties. So.
That's true. But the country was founded upon checks and balances, which the two-party system.
I don't know if those things were, you know, necessarily tied together. It's just one of those things where we used to have a commenter, I can't remember his political party pooper, who's Mr. Anti-political parties and, you know, just this sort of political utopia where everybody just, you know, I don't understand how non-party systems work functionally in especially in as divided a country as we are today. We almost have to line up in straight lines in parties. But, you know, maybe back in the old, you know, maybe 200 years ago, that was an all right idea when the population was fairly homogenous and you could get some smart people in a room and get some shit done. But not today. Sorry. It's not going to work.
Well, I think, yeah. I mean, I don't think it's practical to have any more than two parties. And this is something that I end up disagreeing with a lot of liberals about, and I get criticized a lot about this because I think the two-party system functions well insofar as we have a relatively stable constitution. We have a relatively stable form of government. It has endured for quite a long time now, all things considered. If you look at European governments, for example, where there are multiple parties, all you have are small pluralities in elections, which doesn't necessarily
translate. I mean, it's all relative to stability. Is all relative to population size. I mean, our big problem, our number one problem in just the way our politics works is the massive size. You know, our large population, you know, population density, and the completely heterogeneous makeup of the political body. I mean, it's just impossible to have. You just get nothing done with more than you're not getting anything done with two parties. So, you know, a third or a fourth at this late date, it just gets drowned out. I mean, look at Bernie Sanders. We all love him and he's great, but he's completely ineffectual. Yeah. I mean, because it's a party of one basically.
Yeah.
That doesn't work in today's. I mean, fuck the. You know, I always love reading de Tocqueville and really trying to imagine democracy in America, that's the title of his book, just really trying to imagine what it must have been like back then, even as ass backwards and, you know, black people weren't people and women weren't people and you had to have land. But just still, just the purity of – and that's a horrible word to use, but just the way it was built was so elegant for the time and place that it happened, you know?
Yeah.
And representatives were – kings among men intellectually back then. I mean, these were the cream of the cream of the crop. That's why I'm so disgusted with just the Republican political base now. They are just dummies. I mean dummies, like really functionally retarded gump-like dummies.
Oh, yeah.
And that is so the opposite of what Thomas Jefferson and those gods among men as far as education was concerned is so the ass opposite of what they would have wanted. Mm-hmm. Just this absolute worshipfulness of being stupid, just being flat out dumbass.
Yeah,
that's why I just cannot forgive a political party for having its head that far up its ass on purpose and enjoying it.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are two sides to that. Obviously, I think there are a lot of really fucking stupid Republicans who just don't have no business being in politics or anywhere near lawmaking.
No.
But then I think on the other hand, there are also a lot of Republicans who are just brazenly willing to pander to idiots, to pander to the people who, you know, would rather have a politician you can have a beer with than a politician who knows what the hell he's talking about with regards to making adequate laws and addressing the needs of the country.
Right. Right.
They would just rather, you know, have an idiot who sounds like them.
Yeah.
I don't want someone who sounds like me. I want someone much, much smarter than me making laws and deciding what happens to 300 million people in this country alone. Say nothing of our influence abroad.
Right.
You know, right. You don't want someone who's as dumb as, you know, some guy who sits at the end of the bar at Jake's Pub, you know, sloshed half the time and, you know.
Yeah, but so many people do these days. They just want normal food. I mean, that's what got Bush elected. Mm-hmm. You know, the media, the liberal media was so effective at painting Gore as this hyper intellectual snob douchebag that nobody wanted to have a beer with. You know, it was that aw shucks folksy kind of bullshit that got Bush elected.
Yeah.
And that was where Clinton was the master triangulator of, you know, aw shucks folksiness. And from fucking, you know, country cornpone, you know, couldn't get much more country cornpone, but yet he's a Rhodes Scholar. I mean, he had everything. He was the perfect storm of political awesome. He was fucking everybody. He had the JFK thing. He just couldn't stop fucking. But he was a genius, a political genius, a scholar. I mean, it was just everything in one package. And Barack Obama is the same way, except that, oops, he happens to be black and he's Barack Obama.
Yeah, that's exactly
he's not
right.
Fucking everything. But, I mean, he's got this amazing intellect and but there's just no country, you know, there's no, he's like us for 60-70% of the people.
Well, what's happening now, and this segues nicely into the big, obviously
Birthers.
The big top of the week, is that the attack against the president is moving from his birth certificate to his college records, which is now is kind of institutionalizing the you know, he reads from a teleprompter meme, basically insinuating that the first African-American president is a fucking moron.
Well,
I mean, that's what they're saying.
It's more like, you know, an affirmative action president. You know, like it took – no one remembers him because he basically just got in because he was this, you know, black kid whose dad was from Kenya and got in with affirmative action and just coasted with his feet up. And that's why no one can find a term paper he ever wrote or meet it. You know, nobody can find anybody that ever saw him at Columbia or anywhere. So I don't know. You know, there are some strange – I can't believe he released the long form. I was shocked. I went over to the Daily Beast, you know, for Sullivan, and I'm just scrolling, and there it is. I'm like, what the fuck? He did what? I could not believe it. Because why would you do that?
What I saw and what I've read is that the problem was that some independents were starting to buy into the birther shit.
Oh, and fucking hell.
Some independent voters were starting to believe it. And again, this doesn't say – I mean, this is not – I mean, the president is doing what he has to do at this point to secure that independent middle. The problem is
I know.
That, you know, the Republicans continue to succeed by screeching the same nonsense over and over again. And they just never stop. That's why – something as ridiculous as birtherism has become so mainstreamed and started to eke into the middle because they just keep yelling it and they keep saying it and they keep
I blame
raising doubt.
It's the press's fault, though. It's absolutely the press's fault for having any of these fuckholes on the television or printing a word about it. I mean, the New York Times had a scathing editorial about it. You know, the certificate of embarrassment, they called it, where it was just an absolute, you know, scathing look at why we even point cameras at these monkey shows. I absolutely blame it all on the press. It's a non-issue. It is the non-issuiest issue ever. And yet cycle after cycle after cycle, we have to hear about it. We have to in any way, even if you just don't even debunk it. Don't point a camera at it. It's nothing. That's why, and to me, I don't get the political calculus. I don't give a if there are independents that are buying that shit, then fuck those independents. It's time to move on from them too, and they can kiss my ass because I don't understand the political calculus in not letting your enemies make complete dick fools out of themselves, which is what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Just let them burn bright and hot and then burn out and fucking die.
Yeah.
Make no sense to me whatsoever to cave into that.
Yeah, Jonathan.
And even give it a, you know, any sort of shade of legitimacy by coming out and proving it.
Yeah, I mean, Jonathan Alter said today, I believe it was on Hardball, he said something to the effect of President Obama giving up a giant gift to the Republican Party by releasing that birth certificate, and not because it doesn't really have anything to do with the birth certificate itself. It just has to do with the fact that the Republicans were committing suicide, basically, by
right.
wrapping their arms, you know, Trump in there, and it was just making them look like the idiots that they are.
Exactly. And, so why would you let them off that hook?
Yeah.
That's what I don't get. I do not get that. Mm. Unless there's some October surprise where the next birth certificate proves that he's like – that his real father was God. Like, oh, fooled you, bitches. I'm actually Jesus. I'm back and I'm pissed. You know, something awesome like that. I just don't understand it. Or if you're going to do it like 2 days before the election. Just – I mean, just a shit can, everybody. I don't understand. I don't know why. Just get down in the dirt with him. I don't get it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously there was a line that I think the media crossed at some point, and it just began to flood into the mainstream as being something that might not be able to be bottled back up again. And so I think the president just had to head that off at the pass, bring in anyone who still has a brain in their head from wondering, well, maybe I don't see it, even though there it was. Even though if you look at the Hawaii newspapers and you look at CNN, for God's sake, where they were actually saying, you know what, no, you can't go into the Department of Health in Honolulu and ask for your birth certificate. You can't do it.
It's
you
against
can't
the
have
law.
Yeah,
I mean, he's the president of the United States, the most powerful man on earth, and he had to twist an arm. Yeah. Some schmuck, you know, some civil servant in Hawaii making $8.50 an hour. Had, well, I don't know, Mr. President, it's against the law. I'll have to ask my supervisor. I mean, what the fuck is going on here? Yeah. Really? He had to. It's like, yeah, this is Barack Obama. I need my birth. Well, I don't know. It's against the rules. Jesus, how un? I mean, just this pathetic.
Yeah. So I mean, he had to. I think he had to do it. I think there was no way around it. Really, I mean, he could have let it go, continue to let it go. But you know, I guess on the other hand, the reaction, it was predictable.
Of course.
And so they're going to continue raising doubts about it anyway. So sure. People inclined to believe it are going to still believe it. They don't trust this guy.
Yeah, I mean, there was empirical evidence before. There's no, you know, it's a matter of faith to these people. Yeah. It's just like trying to tell them there is no, you know, that Jesus didn't ride velociraptors. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of faith.
Yeah, it was like George Carlin used to do this bit about making these big fences and imprisoning all the wackaloons and rapists and murderers, and then opening up a little like 2-foot by 2-foot hole in the fence for 30 seconds and then watching and then putting that on primetime television. And I think what the president was doing was closing that gate so that the crazies weren't flooding into the independents.
Yeah,
and I think that was the entire mission, and I think in that regard it was accomplished. I think the president was able to put a stopgap there and prevent birtherism from escaping into what we would consider to be the mainstream.
Hmm. I don't know. Somehow I just can't buy this birther run on independence. I just don't buy that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think if you look at, I mean, even there are even a lot of Democrats who believe the president is a Muslim. I mean, you know, those of us who follow this on a daily basis and we're on the blogs, everything like that, we know what's what because we read and we understand the facts and the truth. There are a lot
of
people
prone to ridiculous conspiracy theories where, you know, 50 years ago, a couple of people conspired to plan a Manchurian candidate in the White House by naming him Barack Obama and, you know, sending him through this unlikely chain of events to get where he's that's just what I don't get, is just the whole, okay, so let's say he wasn't born in America. What do you think happened exactly? Yeah. How did this – where's the conspiracy? At what age did this start? When did this start?
Yeah.
Fucking morons. Oh, my God.
Well, so,
right, I don't want to talk about birthers.
Well, yeah. I mean, so now it's becoming the president is an idiot and somehow wasn't able to get into Columbia and Harvard on his own volition, that he was able – that he skirted in on, you know, affirmative action.
Okay, whatever. I'd just get up and I'd say, yep, you're right. Let's move on. If I was him, I'd say, you're right. I'm the first affirmative action president. Suck it, bitches. Yeah. And then move right on. What you gonna do about it?
There's no mystery to any of this. And so what if – you know what? If he was accepted for some reason because of affirmative action, it's not like affirmative action is against the law.
Right.
It's not like he broke any laws. And clearly – his grades spoke for themselves anyway. I mean, in terms of what he was able to achieve, I mean, you don't go from being, let's say, hypothetically a moron at Columbia and then a genius who's the editor of the Harvard Law Review, graduating magna cum laude from Harvard. Yeah. You don't go
Harvard
from one thing
that
to
shit
the other.
Just willy-nilly. It's Harvard.
So all you got to do is extrapolate backwards from Harvard to Columbia, and clearly this guy was a brilliant student.
You know. Or at least passable. I mean, I don't really give a shit. I've been in the same room with the man. I've listened to the man speak. I've read the man's books. I tend to think he's got a functioning brain in his head. And he's been a fairly decent president for the last 2.5 years. So fuck all y'all and your stupid conspiracy theories about his education. I don't give a shit. I don't care if he kept it for this entire college career, put his feet up on the desk and did nothing but smoke joints the whole time. I don't give a rat's ass. Yeah. Next.
So one thing I want to recommend to you, that you never, ever piss off Lawrence O'Donnell.
No, he went batshit.
Oh, this is great. Did you? I don't know if you've heard this yet, but yeah, this is
Tate.
Yeah.
That's the worst name ever.
This is so cool. This is a little... This is from last night.
Yes.
Okay. Now, there is now, no longer, not an inch of room for any sane doubt about the time and the place of Barack Obama's birth or his parentage or the fact that he is a natural-born citizen of the United States of America. Are you now ready to apologize for the crusade that you have mounted against those simple truths?
Well, I hope I will have time to respond, which I did not have an opportunity to do before. And I believe that Obama's statement today is nothing but a preemptive strike. We do have a court hearing coming Monday morning, 9 o'clock, in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And the reason he is talking about this issue, if I can have a close-up, is because at this hearing and two other hearings, I'm providing documents. Can I have a close-up, please, sir? Sir,
what is it? Tell us what the document is.
Okay, this is Barack Obama's. Can you do a close-up? I need to show this.
Tell us what the document is.
This is Barack Obama's Selective Service Certificate.
Okay.
And if you look at it...
Yeah, we don't have to see it. Never mind.
It shows...
I want you to talk about the birth certificate that you saw today. I want you to... The Selective Service has nothing to do with proving his citizenship.
Absolutely.
I want you to talk about the birth certificate you saw today for the first time in your life. Do you accept the veracity of the birth certificate you saw today for the first time in your life?
Okay, what... Okay, first of all...
Yes or no on the birth certificate. Is that his birth certificate? Do you accept that?
Okay, are you going to let me speak?
No!
Your program is nothing.
Listen,
but Obama...
You have,
Obama
to, you have to tell me
machine.
Whether you accept the truth
let
of that
me,
birth certificate.
Let me respond.
No, Barack Tates, you're
Obama
not going to do... No, this is not
fraud,
where you come to do your madness.
Which is a felony. Anybody else will be sitting... No.
I love that. This is not where you come to do your madness.
That's brilliant. Can I have a close-up? I'm ready for my close-up, Mr.
Ready for a close-up. It is so
Can
so
I have
funny.
A close-up? It's a selective service form I've always been talking about.
That's right.
fucking psycho woman.
She really is. And it was funny when she held it up, too. Whatever she had blacked out on the selective service thing was actually interfering with the chroma key. So you, it was all you saw in that. There was a big strip of it. All you saw on that strip was the background that she's sitting in front of.
That's awesome.
Because it was like,
she's like one of the worst TV weathermen ever. Like, yeah, really. Fucking with his own chroma key.
Unbelievable.
Oh, she's insane.
I want you to talk about the thing you've never seen before in your life. You begged for this. You begged for this document. You got this document. Talk about the document that entered your life today and proved that you were a liar. Talk about that document.
Oh, damn.
Obama is a liar.
Was he born in Hawaii? Do you believe he was born in Hawaii according to the truth of that birth certificate?
Stop yelling, behave like a human
being. Will you talk about his birth certificate?
Behave like a human being.
Will you talk about his birth certificate?
Harvard is not preparing human beings. This is Barack Obama's.
Let me get this straight. You are coming on this show and you're not going to talk about his birth certificate.
Barack Obama is committing Social Security
fraud. Are you going to talk about his birth certificate?
The Social Security number that Barack Obama is using.
Get her out of here. Get her off this show. Get out. You're not
going to
talk about the birth certificate.
It
only takes. Go home. You're fired. Go play with Donald Trump.
No, oh my God.
Look, she's crazy. I invited a crazy person on the show to see if a crazy person faced with the thing that the crazy person was trying to get for 2.5 years could say something responsive, something human, to the document that was released today that she's never seen before in her life. And she wants to play with all of her other kids' toys, all of her other crazy documents. I did not expect this to go this way. I thought she was going to address the birth certificate. We were told she was going to address the birth certificate. She's afraid to address the birth certificate, obviously. Great. This just gives us more time for Barney Frank. We'll be right back with Barney Frank.
Yeah, there you go.
Unbelievable.
Yesterday. And, you know, I don't know if anyone's really bothered to look into what she's all about. I mean, she looks like a cartoon character.
She sounds like, it's like Ivana Trump went and fucked Daffy Duck or something. I don't know. There's something serious. She's from outer space. Orly Tates. Sounds like something like, I was on shore leave for 6 weeks and I banged this hooker in Saigon and I got Orly Tates.
Yeah.
I got Orly Tates. Oh, it was so painful. I needed all kinds of penicillin to cure my Orly Tates.
What's hilarious is that
drippy, gooey Orly Tates.
Orly Tates.
My Orly Tates is flaring up. Oh, God, that Orly Tates is killing me. Somebody give me some penicillin.
Yeah. I mean, it's hilarious. The two people who were most demanding the president's honesty about his birth are a couple of people who look like cartoon characters.
Yeah.
Trump and Tates.
Yeah. I honestly think this whole thing with Trump is like some kind of unbelievably wacky prank. Like just a super duper episode of Punk'd. I mean, just like I honestly don't think he has his head this far up his own Trump hole.
Yeah,
well, I honestly don't think. I mean, seriously, he's gone so completely overboard. It's almost like the two of them, like Obama and Trump, just got together one night over drinks and said, and Obama's like, "Look, why don't you do me a favor and just act like a complete ass clown."
Well, he understands the Republican business model, and that's all he's doing. I mean, he's doing what a lot of Republicans do. Certainly a lot of pundits on Fox News.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just pretending to believe all this shit in order to further their own careers, to increase their public speaking fees and their, you know, to land a book and to increase their ratings. I mean, that's what Sarah Palin's doing. That's what they all do. That's what Sean Hannity does. That's what Glenn Beck has been doing for his entire career. It's going the way the wind blows. Wind's blowing for wacky wingnut conspiracy theories. That's what they're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Because it works for them. Yeah. That's what they do. That's what they do. And that's why this was, I think, so prescient it was so exactly what the Republican Party is all about. This quote right here.
Everybody's saying I should run for president. Let me ask you a question. Meatloaf, should I run for president?
Absolutely.
That's the Republican Party. In this
popular douchebagism.
Meatloaf.
Ultimate pop. Yeah, Meatloaf says it's okay. Must run for president. Meatloaf says it's all right.
That's what Republican politics have come down to. Asking Meatloaf whether he should run for president.
I formed an exploratory committee this week, and Meatloaf is on board.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
It's so
Meatloaf.
Ridiculous and cartoonish and unserious. That's the Republican Party now. It doesn't have anything to do with policy. It doesn't have anything to do with setting good policy or fixing the things that are wrong with the country. It has everything to do with personal gain. I mean, there's always that element, no matter what it is in politics. Politics is about power, and that's a fact.
Well, and the Republican base now is this sort of weird mixture of psycho-Christian fundamentalist wackos and this sort of wealthy, like the lower middle class, just working their ass off for billionaires. Like, they're just so awestruck by wealth. And so suspicious of anybody that would go into public service just for the public service of it. I mean, they seem to understand that everybody at the top tier in the White House could be making high six figures in the private sector doing what they do for fucking nothing, you know, for $120 a day or whatever the fuck it is. They're so awestruck by wealth and fame, even though they've got absolutely no chance of it for themselves, they will just roll over. I mean, it's the whole "what's the matter with Kansas" thing. They would just roll over on their own economic good for Trump is the ultimate icon of that. Just wealth and flash, and he's got his own TV show and a jet with his name on it. And fucking hell, I don't understand that. I don't understand why that's so popular with these people. I live in the center of that culture. These fucking dirt eaters out here that seem to worship rich people as if it's like a serfdom. Like it's the old kingdom system with lords and they're just eating dirt and whatever the Lord wants. I don't get that. Pisses me the fuck off.
That's because they tell people what they want to hear. They understand their audience, and that's all they do. There's no policy. There's no seriousness about it. Serious is about taking the good with the bad, understanding the realities of things. The Republicans have abandoned that. They're not into reality anymore. They're into fast food bullshit politics. That's the entire thing. Fast food politics. Shit that can fit onto a bumper sticker. Meatloaf, should I run for president?
I'm going to get busy printing me some of those motherfuckers.
Meatloaf, should I run for president?
What would Meatloaf do? Yeah. WWMD.
So what we are doing, we are on the heels of the deepest recession since the Great Depression. People are still, millions of people are still out of work. People are fucked. Including you, including me. I mean, people are financially screwed.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to have a good credit rating for years and years and years, probably another decade before I have some sort of acceptance. You know that commercial, for, I don't know, what is some credit report commercial where there's three guys representing three different credit scores and the two buff guys in their monkey or whatever that is, that bodysuit. And then there's a little saggy guy with the Jason Voorhees hockey mask on. That's my credit rating right now. Oh, yeah. And it's because of this recession. It's entirely because of this recession. And so now, right on the heels of that, what are we going to do? Half of the country is going to support some unserious cartoon character with ridiculous hair who asks Meatloaf for permission to run for president. That's what we're doing?
Oh,
are
God
you serious?
It. God love it.
I mean, it's unbelievable. This is Republican policy. This right here.
Everybody's saying I should run for president. Let me ask you a question. Meatloaf, should I run for president?
Absolutely.
And this little lapdog Meatloaf with a big shit-eating grin on his face, talking like he's like a 1940s newsie, like a little like a paper boy. Say, Mr. Trump, I think you should run for president. That'd be swell.
Hot diggity, Mr. Trump. Let's go to the White House.
Why, Mr. Trump, that's a swell idea.
Get a little zippity-doo.
like God. Characters out of a Coen Brothers movie.
They really, really are.
Thomas Jefferson up in his godless, Jesusless heaven, looking down on us going, oh, fucking hell.
And, you know, there's not that much of a gap between Trump and Bachman and Ron Paul. And Ron Paul's, I think Ron Paul's even more cartoonish than Trump and Bachman.
I do too. He's just out of his fucking gourd.
Really?
I mean, he's just, I'm Ron Paul. He's kind of like Perot. Yeah. Perot is just, I mean, there's just something, some spark plug not firing in Perot that you just kind of had to look at him like, wow, Ron Paul's the same way. And right. I've never met a Ron Paul supporter I didn't want to punch in the fucking mouth. Yeah. I've never met one that just wasn't smarmy and smug and arrogant and douchey. Mm-hmm. These bullshit libertarians. I just don't get it.
I don't get it.
Let's just throw it all in the wind. Fuck it. The free market will work it out. Oh, yeah. We don't need roads or the fucking, you know, FDA or the EPA. We don't need any of that, you dicks.
I hate
libertarians more than I do Republicans. I really do. At least Republicans cling to an ideology that they pull out of their ass. Mm. Libertarians just live in a goddamn fantasy world.
Yeah.
And they should all go to hell.
Let's pick up on that in a second, because I have this theory about libertarianism. We'll get into that after we talk about some stuff. Hey, it's the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis show. I'm Bob, that's Elvis over there. Show's exclusively brought to you by BubbleGenius.com at www.BubbleGenius.com. It's the best goddamn soap in the world. Mother's Day is coming up. What do I send mom for Mother's Day? And I'm just gonna buy a bunch of stuff from Bubble Genius and have it shipped to my mom. I mean, it's if you don't want to send ridiculous flowers or, you know, the same bullshit. I mean, you don't want to send her, like, they have, like, you can send your mom pajamas. That's kind of weird, isn't it?
That's super weird.
It's very weird.
Yeah, if you kiss your mom on the mouth still, then maybe that's a good idea.
Oh, my God. Meatloaf, should I send my mom pajamas for Mother's Day?
Absolutely.
Meatloaf does send his mom pajamas.
Meatloaf.
He rolls.
Meatloaf, should I kiss my mom on the mouth?
Absolutely.
I'm having such a psychotic moment right now, and we need to really not talk about Mother's Day.
So, if you're looking for something to purchase for mom for Mother's Day, head on over to BubbleGenius.com. And they've got, oh my God, they've got their Mother Scrubber Earth Mother Gift Pack. Calling all Earth Mothers, our gift basket is perfect for cosmic hippie goddesses everywhere. Have a spa day on Mount Olympus.
Don't we have a clip? Don't we have a clip?
No, you know, we don't.
Oh, those bastards.
You'll get our I'm Your Venus soap on a rope.
Venus.
And her companion, Yo Mama Cocoa Butter Soap. Huh. Joining the goddesses are Peace, Love, and Happiness, our Give Me Some Tail Mermaid Soap. Well, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, that's good. That's funny. Mom has a sense of humor.
I get jokes.
And rounding out the set is our Hippie Stench Artisan Cream Perfume. Have a spa day on Mount Olympus with Bubble Genius. Send that to mom. That's a good idea. And they've got a variety of other things for Mother's Day, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. And make sure when you order from Bubble Genius that you type in your promo code. That's BOBANDELVIS, Bob and Elvis. And you'll get 15% off your entire order. It's a bargain at twice the price. They pass the savings along to you. It's pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius at www.BubbleGenius.com.
Chef Bob.
Buy some soap, bitches.
And hold them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section on iTunes. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
It's during that little thing. That's the only break that we ever get in the whole show. Usually.
I know. We are marathon men. We are quite impressive.
Most talk shows, they have lengthy commercial breaks.
Yeah, where they can go and fucking take a leak or jerk off or do something. We had to just push right through it.
Yeah. And so we usually we usually get that one Bubble Genius commercial lasts about 90 seconds where I can actually go.
I usually take that time to cook some heroin on my bent spoon and plunge it into my rusty veins, my dirty, dirty veins. Now, anyone that knows my mother, and no one listening to this show does, thankfully, if I were to ever send my mother a lovely basket full of Bubble Genius products, that it would be looked upon with such disdain and distaste. And this is absolutely no shot at Bubble Genius. This is just simply my mother. So yeah, I would love to send her some lovely Bubble Genius products, but They don't make anything that would meet her very, very high standards of snobbery and of tutory and whatever the fuck else. I don't know. You just have to know my mother, and you're lucky you don't.
Well, you have to ask Meatloaf.
Yeah, Meatloaf would love my mother.
Meatloaf, should Elvis send his mom Bubble Genius soap for Mother's Day?
Absolutely.
See, he agrees.
Meatloaf, you always set me straight. Oh, Meatloaf. See, now I don't like him anymore, and I just coming off of loving him in the opening scene of that Jack Black movie. What's the name of his Tenacious D? The movie, you know, the pick of destiny. Have you ever seen that?
No.
The opening scene and the prologue, the opening 3 minutes of that movie is absolutely priceless. They got this little kid to play little baby Jack Black, little 10, 12-year-old Jack Black, who comes – and Meatloaf is his dad, which is perfect. Meatloaf is Jack Black's dad, and they're all – it's a very pious, religious family, and they're all sitting around the dinner table praying over dinner. And here comes this little Jack Black, and the kid just looks like he could be mini Jack Black. And he starts doing this unbelievably – pornographic, profane rock song about slaying dragons and cocks, and I mean, it's just and Meatloaf freaks out, and they do this rock opera together in the bedroom. It's priceless. You've got to check that out. And then he prays to Dio, the rock star James, whatever, who just died recently. Dio, and then that's what sets him off on his crusade to be a rock star. It's absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, I still miss Dio.
Yeah, Dio, that was a loss
Ronnie
for us
James
all.
Dio.
Dio, who I'd never heard of until I saw that movie.
Right. It was kind of...
Do you have just big chunks of your of time in your life, like stretches of the 70s and 80s, that you just don't have any social or media memory of, and you talk to people and they're like, what the fuck's the matter with you? You've never heard that? You never heard that song? You never heard of that group? You just completely blacked out on?
Yeah.
I do. Yeah. I don't know why, but I've got these huge stretches. I don't know if it's because I spent so much time as a kid moving around in Europe and just off the American grid. I think that's probably it. But, you know, people are like, I'm like, what's this song? And they're like, what do you mean? You've never heard it. It's like entire bands and things, American media things. I just missed, completely missed.
Yeah. Well, see, I fancy myself a really strong expert when it comes to television. And television history. But there are shows that were on the air that you know about that I have never, ever heard of. Like, there's a big gap in my television knowledge in terms of just these weird, obscure, I don't know, they're half-hour sitcoms or hour-long dramas. It doesn't matter. There are shows that I just had never heard of. Remember we were debating on Twitter about some ridiculous show that I just thought, well, what the hell is that show?
And I know I don't believe in your little midget show, but I know that much.
Yeah, Little People Big World, which was canceled.
No, that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
No, you need to do, show. Do you have the HBOs there in Hawaii? Do they get the HBOs?
Yes.
Do you have it?
Not presently, no.
Well, what the fuck? You need to get caught up on Game of Thrones so that we can weekly talk about Game of Thrones, because you're pissing me off that you're not participating in the Game of Thrones.
Well, I see, I can watch it because, you know, I'm still... Long story. I'm still paying for Comcast in Pennsylvania.
Oh, so you can stream it or something?
And so, yeah, so you can actually do the, they call it Xfinity.
Oh.
So I was,
in fact,
I was watching the Ricky Gervais show streamed online. But anyway.
Yeah, I VOD'd, video on demanded, his little thing, Talking Funny, with Chris Rock and Seinfeld and Louis C.K. It was surprisingly unrewarding. I had big high hopes for it. It was just a bunch of comedians jerking each other off, and I'm not a big fan of that.
Yeah.
I mean, just really kissing each other's asses and everything in predictable ways.
You know, they used to do that on the old Jerry Lewis telethons. They get these comedians on, and they would just get so teary-eyed talking about, you know, just shit the shit that they found hilarious, but no one else did.
Yeah. I ended up just wanting – I mean, with those icons there – I mean, Chris Rock said almost nothing. He just sat there. Jerry was just Jerry. I mean, there's a certain smugness to Jerry. And Jerry Seinfeld is the king of comedy of all time as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. I mean, he is absolute – other than – I mean, living. Richard Pryor will never be beat. I am the biggest – I can recite every Richard Pryor act and every album verbatim. he was the king. But living today, there's no greater comedian than Jerry Seinfeld, period. But he just doesn't need to be there because he's bigger than life. He's just Jerry Seinfeld. So it really, I'm only interested in Gervais and Louis C.K. I'm fascinated by Louis C.K. and how his mind works. Mm-hmm. And how and he did say a couple of things. I mean, the only funny moments in that show came from – the only interesting moments came from Louis C.K. And I would watch – if there was just an hour-long TV show every week where the camera's just on Louis C.K. and it's just him talking about how his brain works, I would watch that.
Yeah.
Because that guy's a fucking genius. I mean, he's out of control.
He is the – I think Louis C.K. is the funniest living comedian.
Now, working today, yeah. I mean, I don't think Jerry Seinfeld will ever be – I mean, I just – as far as a canon of work and a impact on culture, he is the – I mean, he can't be beat, Jerry Seinfeld. But the funniest, rawest, realist, most socially conscious comedian working today is by far Louis C.K. Mm-hmm. And it all comes from just this amazing place of anger and self. I mean, he's one of these great self introspective comedians. That he'll just talk about anything, and I really respect that.
He's so brutally honest, but he does it in such an earnest way, in such a likable way that you forgive him for saying things that are actually quite offensive.
Oh, extremely offensive. Yeah, but they actually talk. You should check that out because he actually talks about the mechanics of that the rape joke that he talks about.
Oh, yeah.
He says, I shouldn't talk about it. You should never rape anybody unless you know you have to. You know, unless the person you want to have sex with doesn't want to have sex with you, then you got no other choice. You got to rape them. I mean, that's just so patently offensive that it transcends offensiveness. You're just like, oh, and he says he's never had any trouble with that joke. Like, never gotten a letter or you know. Because it's just so patently absurd. I mean, that's really what comedy is all about. It's just absurdism taken to extremes.
Right. And if you do it, I always said if you do it in a likable, affable kind of way, people tend to be forgiving about that. And people tend to understand that like, Louis C.K. is so satirical. You get from not only from what he's saying, but also his tone of voice, you get that he doesn't really believe it, that he's making a statement about that. You know, it's like George Carlin was that way too. Like George Carlin could throw out he could say cunt and he could say all these terrible things about women or about minorities or even about liberals and so forth. But he did it in a way that you could tell when he was taking on a persona and satirizing that. Through his own voice.
Yeah.
It's a complicated, very smart form of comedy that not everyone can pull off.
Yeah.
And
like what's your opinion of Colin Quinn? I can't fucking stand that guy. I don't think he's ever said anything funny ever.
No.
I can't stand, and it's exactly because of that persona you're talking about. He's just somebody that I want to punch. It's just a miserable douche. And there's something about that personality that makes everything he says unfunny to me.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, you're just but if you take – but I bet if you transplant – if you took like an hour of his act and put it in somebody else's mouth where it's just not the persona of Colin Quinn and the voice and everything, maybe I'd find it amusing.
Yeah.
But there's some comedians that just – I'm like, no, can't watch you. You're complete – just a train wreck.
Yeah. You've either got it or you don't. I mean, it's comedy is so – it's so specific. Exactly. You really have to nail just a such delicate balance.
Yeah.
And if you go too far one side, it's not funny. Too far the other side, it's not funny. You just have to balance right there somewhere in this sweet spot. But so much of it is just ingrained in the comedian's personality. And that defines, you know, whether you're – I don't know if you've ever seen the documentary Comedian about Jerry Seinfeld.
Oh, yeah.
It's the difference between Jerry Seinfeld and Orny Adams.
If
you're brilliant and you just have that natural gift, you're Jerry Seinfeld. If you're a hack and you're not quite sure what's funny and what's not funny, you're Orny Adams.
Yeah.
And it's the difference, you know, it was another great thing about the Larry Sanders Show. You're either Larry and you're funny or you're Hank and people laugh at you, not at you.
Yeah. Just constantly grasping and just not making it.
Right.
Yeah. Man, that Larry Sanders Show is something.
Yeah, it really is.
I just went on a hyper marathon on the Netflix and what a show that was.
Yeah.
There wasn't a loser in that batch. Mm-hmm. That was just unbelievable. And it's such a time capsule now because so many of the guests, like show after show after show, people just dead now. Yeah. They're really striking. Like, oh my God, that guy's dead. And that guy's Jesus. But Bill Hicks is another comedian there that, that whose persona transcended. I mean, his act was so political and so social, and he died, you know, he's gone way too soon. I mean, like a Andy Kaufman kind of character. But his personality, I mean, just, there's something about watching Bill Hicks. You were just transfixed by him. You just had to watch him.
He had this effortless swagger about him.
Yeah. But, he just had this huge persona. It was bigger than, and he was, I mean, just the dumpiest kind of nothingest guy to look at. But you just watch him and you're like, oh my God, just the force of this guy. He had such a fan, just such a cult following. It was just tragic when he died. Just absolutely killed me.
Because
of his albums.
I mean, he could have applied that swagger to sort of a more mainstream type of comedy.
Well, he was like a televangelist. I mean, he had that kind of personality, like a televangelical force to him. And in fact, I think if I'm remembering correctly, and somebody on the blog or somebody could set me straight, or I could Google it later, but I think he was actually on that track at one point, like Kinison, to being a preacher. To being that guy, and then he swerved off the tracks, but he brought that personality with him. It's just he was something to watch.
I really
missed that.
It was that way. I think it was Kinison who was going to be a preacher. Actually, Kinison was a preacher for a
period. Yeah, Kinison was. Yeah, but I think for some reason I'm thinking Hicks was too, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, Hicks was a. I mean,
do you remember the first time you saw Sam Kinison, like on the Rodney Dangerfield special?
Yeah.
Where you're just like, what is going on here? I mean, you talk about, you know, it's like seeing Elvis for the first time. You're just like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I mean, the
first time
I saw Kinison was in that movie, in the Dangerfield movie, Back to School.
Oh, yeah. When he was the teacher. Say it.
Yeah. And, and then I had the comedy album, Have You Seen Me Lately?
Yeah.
Which is Kinison's sort of quintessential comedy album, where he did all the big bits, and it had the Wild Thing cover on there and everything, and it was it was brilliant for its time. It doesn't hold up like Bill Hicks's stuff does.
Yeah,
like Bill Hicks, you know, Richard Pryor, Louis C.K., George Carlin, all that stuff is timeless. You can listen to that. Jerry Seinfeld, timeless.
Yeah,
any Kinison.
It had a sort of 80s hyper hysteria to it. Yeah,
that's exactly right. Yeah. It was like, I mean, Kinison was very much like the hairband of comedy. You know, he kind of lived that Motley Crue, hairband lifestyle.
He hung out in that crowd and he had the long haired, you know, the crazy girlfriends and everything.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, if you're looking, if you want nostalgia, it kind of works, but not so much anymore. I loved it at the time. But not so much. I listened a little bit to it again, and I was just like, I can understand why I liked it then, but I don't really like it so much now. And mainly because I've discovered so many other comedians who are, you know, as the years have gone by, really great, timeless, smart comedians. But anyway.
Yeah.
As far as the political commentary goes, you just can't. You can't beat Bill Hicks. You can't beat George Carlin. You can't beat Louis C.K. These guys are geniuses.
Yeah. But, Louis C.K. is, he's almost hard to watch sometimes. You're blinded by his whatever it is he's doing. I mean, you're just like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just so completely unapologetic, and I love that. It takes a bigger, gutsier man than myself to be that off the tracks the way he is.
Right.
I really respect that.
And you've got to watch his show. He's got it's called Louis, I think it is, on FX. Hilarious, 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 hilarious.
Yep.
It's a brilliant show. So libertarianism. I wanted to mention that it's my theory that libertarians who are out of the Ayn Rand school, I mean, I think
Ayn Rand, those are two separate schools, though, really, libertarians and the Ayn Rand school. I mean, objectivism is fucking libertarianism on steroids.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Well, yeah.
Or are we wrong?
Yeah, I don't know. I tend to blend them all together. I think it's all the same stuff, just different extremes, and it's all in the same circle.
I just don't
know
that there are that many real Ayn Randian objectivists. I mean, I just don't think they exist. I've never met one in person.
Well, that's Ron Paul. I mean, Ron Paul, I mean, named his kids after Ayn Rand.
Oh, Christ.
I mean, yeah. I mean, Rand Paul. Rand Paul is named after Ayn Rand.
Is that where he gets that?
Yeah.
Oh, fucking hell.
Yeah, that's where Rand is. Rand is named after Ayn Rand.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I don't know how I didn't know that. That's awful.
It really
that's
is.
That's the worst thing I've ever heard.
It's like, it's to me, and this is the point that I'm exacerbating here, but it's the Scientology of politics.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Ayn Rand is the L. Ron Hubbard of politics.
Yeah. L. Ron Hubbard is so still alive. He's like on an island. He owns like an entire, you know, like complex of islands somewhere, and he's just basking in it. I used to read that guy's science fiction all the time. He wrote this huge series, this like multi-mega part, like 15-book series, and he cranked those books out in like a week.
Yeah.
And then he's creating religions. I honestly can't understand. Like, I really want to like John Travolta and – I don't, not so much Tom Cruise. I've never, he seems, Tom Cruise to me seems like literally a meat puppet. Like there's somebody somewhere with their arm up his ass making him work. Like it just some, you can tell, you can look at Tom Cruise and tell that he's just a big dummy. Mm-hmm. That he could, but not John Travolta. John Travolta to me seems like he's got a brain in his head. So I really have trouble. I just think Scientology is just the Hollywood machine that keeps gay actors closeted. I mean, I think that's where they go. Because everyone knows John Travolta is gay. Everyone knows it. Everyone knows it. They, you talk to
everyone,
anyone
everyone
in Hollywood,
Tom Cruise.
That John Travolta is a super duper gay person.
Do you think Travolta is gay?
God, yes.
I thought you were mixing. I thought you were conflating him with Tom Cruise. I've never heard anything about Travolta
being
gay.
I won't even stoop to talking about how gay Tom Cruise is. There's just no point talking about that. For God's sakes. But Travolta, there's a clip of Travolta on like Soul Train from pre the Saturday Night Fever where he's talking about Saturday Night Fever. And it I have never seen a more flamingly gay, and not that there's a I don't give a shit. Whatever. Just come out already. Stop having these freaky babies with the it's the whole point of Scientology is to pair gorgeous, unbelievably galactically gorgeous actress women with gay Hollywood leading men. That's what Scientology is about.
Okay.
It's Triangle Head. Yeah. From did you ever see Bowfinger? The Triangle Head?
Yeah.
It's all that's all it is. It's you go in these big buildings and they just make you put triangles on your head or something. I don't get it. How can we do let's me and you invent a religion. It will get our tax-free status and we'll just rake the money in and invent a religion because apparently you can just do it.
Yeah.
We're both science fiction writer nerds. We could totally do it overnight. We could create a religion.
Yeah.
Somebody get me my tax-free status and a pointy hat made out of tinfoil, and I'm ready to roll.
Well, if people buy some of the bullshit that sort of passes for religion and Scientology, some of the teachings and some of the history or whatever it is, the weird science fiction history, then they'll believe anything. Anything.
Yeah, right. It's to the point where, I mean, the truth of Scientology, I mean, the if you read it, you what? Xenu and people born in volcanoes and galactic empires and what the fuck? I mean, that you can't possibly take that seriously. That's why I think, I mean, there's something dreadfully wrong with these people. Remember when that video clip leaked out with Tom Cruise talking about it? And you're talking about Scientology and getting to the various levels? It's like that Anne Heche clip they used to play on Don and Mike where she just goes completely out of her mind talking alien talk.
Yeah.
How could that ever be taken seriously?
Right.
But then compare it to Christianity or any of the other. There was a Boston Legal episode like that where a guy got fired. He sued his company because he got fired because he was a Scientologist. And Alan Shore had to, just conflating all the other religions with – he was defending him and just comparing Scientology to what all the other religions believe in. And you're like, oh, yeah, I guess it's not that waggy.
Yeah. You know, there's actually in Scientology – I'm looking at it here on I'm looking on Wikipedia. I don't know a whole lot about it. I just know that it's very, very strange. The things I've heard – there was a South Park episode about it. Just a lot of really, really weird things. Here's something called squirreling. What the hell is squirreling?
Oh, my God. I don't even want to know.
The Church of Scientology has argued that unauthorized distribution of information about Scientology practices will endanger mankind, for the all-knowing being shall be displeased.
Yeah.
The Religious Technology Center has prosecuted and allegedly sexually harassed individual breakaway groups that have practiced Scientology outside the official church without authorization. The act, wow, of using, the act of using Scientology techniques in a form different than originally described by Hubbard is referred to within Scientology as squirreling.
Oh, my God.
And is said by Scientologists to be high treason.
Yow. Not exactly Martin Luther nailing his shit up to the door, is it?
Yeah. There are several
Swirling.
There are several holidays celebrated by Scientologists. Notably,
are there? I didn't know that. Notably, please do tell me.
L. Ron Hubbard's birthday in March.
Well, of course.
The anniversary of the first publication of Dianetics in May.
Oh, Christ on a stick.
And Auditor's Day in September.
Auditor, yeah. Auditor's there's all Day. These levels of auditing where you got to get your shit together. And it costs a fortune to be a Scientologist. That's why only, you know, like Tom Cruise can afford it. To go through the whole process to get your shit adjusted and go through the ohm machine and all that, it's like $40,000, $50,000, $60,000.
Yeah.
Seriously. Oh my God. I want to be, let's create an offshoot. It's called the Squirrelers, and we'll be an offshoot church and we'll see how quick they come the and knock squirrelers. On our door. Cause they do, they've got like Men in Black. They will come and knock on your door.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's fascinating.
I'm trying to see, find out about Xenu here.
Xenu's awesome. You got to worship you some fucking Xenu.
The story of Xenu is covered in OT3, part of Scientology's secret advanced technology doctrines, taught only to advanced members who have undergone many expensive hours of auditing and reached the state of clear, capital C.
Clear, yeah.
It's gotta described in more detail in the accompanying confidential assets, or no, assists lecture. Of October 3rd, 1968, and is dramatized.
Oh, it goes all the way back to then.
Yeah. Hubbard wrote that Xenu was the ruler of a galactic confederacy 75 million years ago, which consisted of 26 stars and 76 planets, including Earth, which was then known as Tegeaq. Earth was known as Tegeaq.
Oh, yeah.
The planets were overpopulated with an average population of 178 billion.
Wow, that's on Earth? Yeah, nice try.
The Galactic Confederacy civilization was comparable to our own, with aliens, quote-unquote, walking around in clothes which looked very remarkably like clothes they wear this very minute, unquote.
Holy monkey. This, what, 1968 using, clothes?
Yeah, and using cars, trains, and boats looking exactly the same as those circa 1950, 1960 on Earth.
I would love to see that. Aliens driving Bakers.
Oh, man.
Fucking aliens with their pompadours.
Meatloaf. Meatloaf, should Elvis and I start our own religion?
Absolutely.
We have Meatloaf's seal of approval.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Or Meatloaf, should I become a Scientologist?
Absolutely.
Ah, see, he'll kiss ass any which way.
He really is. He can't trust Meatloaf anymore.
You can't trust him.
You know, I'm already giving up on Meatloaf's advice.
Oh, God. Yeah, there's a great YouTube clip with Meatloaf just completely flipping his shit.
Losing his mind, yeah.
On Gary Busey with the paint.
Yeah. Busey and Meatloaf in a room together.
And Meatloaf's the crazy one in that scenario.
Right.
Somehow.
That's some super crazy. That is some galactic crazy if you're crazier than Gary Busey.
Well, I don't know if you realize this, but all of those so-called reality shows, I mean, they're all staged. I mean, they're basically really scripted improv shows. Is what
really? I didn't know. I did not know that. Thanks for cluing me in.
Yeah, I knew you knew it. I was speaking more to the...
Fucking hell. Yeah. Like, I occasionally... for some reason, I got sucked into the most recent Bachelor. Oh, yeah. And I'm just thinking, if Peanut ever grows up to be the kind of woman that would go on a fucking TV show and whore herself out for the affections of probably the douchiest men that I've ever seen in my life on this show, just jackasses. And these women, do they understand just how awful that is? That they're just lining up begging for roses from this complete cock face that they wouldn't look at twice in a bar. Mm. What? Oh my God, the decline and fall of the American Republic.
Yeah.
That there's a show where they actually point cameras on purpose at a bunch of women begging at this guy's feet for a fucking rose to go on to the – and just don't care. And the families don't care. Oh, look. Hi, Mom. This is the guy I brought home. By the way, he's fucking three other broads on the – you know, when he's not here, he's banging these other ones for roses. So we're basically all rose whores. But this is a guy we would like to – you know. And the family's like, oh, that's great. Where – who are these people? Who are these people?
Yeah.
And what about airplane peanuts?
The producers who create these shows and then run them are genius at casting because they're able to find. I mean, there's the celebrity shows, and obviously the celebrities are halfway decent at acting, so they're going to be able to improvise these scenes, these setup, quote unquote, reality scenes where someone melts down and freaks out, and then they play it out, and it's kind of, it is directed and it's kind of scripted insofar as they're given a direction. But they also are able to find real people who can behave and react in those things. Like even something like on HGTV, if you ever watch House Hunters, those people have already select all those shows. They've already picked their house. And what they do is they go back through their three favorite houses and pretend like they're seeing them for the first time again.
Yep.
And it's and it's staged. And I know this because my mom, who is a real estate agent, was actually solicited to participate in House Hunters. And they just couldn't
work
out the timing.
And she told them to fuck off?
Well, she wanted to do it. They couldn't work out the timing.
Oh, Mom.
But they did explain to her how it works. So they said, well, you have a client.
That's awesome.
And they've already seen the houses. They've already chosen their house. And we go back through and we see their three favorite houses and they react as if they've seen it.
Oh, just crush it. Now I'm just, I don't know who to trust.
Pulling
now.
The curtain back from the.
You really are pulling the curtain back.
But here's, I mean.
I remember, you go all the way back to, the king of all reality shows was MTV's The Real World.
Oh, yeah. It was the first one.
The Eric and, what was the girl's name?
There was a cowboy on there and a neo-Nazi.
Eric. Oh, and Eric was sexy. Oh, my God. The guy could not keep a shirt on. The whole series is just him running around without a shirt on. And that's why I knew it wasn't The Real World, because no human being is cut like that. Nobody I know is cut like Eric from The Real World.
Meatloaf, is Elvis secretly gay?
Absolutely.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll buy it. I'll admit it. I watched Eric on The Real World with various levels of pants off back in the early 90s. But what the hell was that girl's name? And there was this smoldering. She was like a hillbilly from Texarkana.
Yeah.
Man, she was cute.
There was someone who was HIV positive on the first season.
Oh, yeah. What's his name? Yeah. He died, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He died a couple of years later.
Oh, that was so. Yeah, what was this?
Yeah, very sad.
Now I have to go back and. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that was like, we were all just, and that was right around the time when MTV just stopped being MTV.
I mean,
it was like, oh, we forgot we actually, you know, the M is for music.
Yeah.
And we were just all glued to The Real World. I just remember how fascinating it was. And now, you know, for us writers, it's like somebody try and sell some scripted television. You can't do it anymore.
No, you can't. Try selling scripted animation. Which is what I do. It's just like, talk about an uphill battle. You not only have scripted against you, but you also have animation against you. Because it's so much easier to get a bunch of
animated reality shows.
Well, yeah. I mean, there was drawn together.
We took our cameras and we pointed at cartoons in the wild, and they're just, you know, let's see how cartoons, Roger Rabbit, let's see how they act in the real world. That would be fun. Hey, there's your idea for a show. Let's write that. A reality show, a cartoon reality show.
Yeah, they already did it. It was called Drawn Together.
Oh, fuck that show. Nobody watched it.
It was very unfunny, but it was
already, it was extremely unfunny.
Already done.
Yeah.
It's too bad. But this I think this is that meltdown. This is Meatloaf freaking out at Gary Busey. And bear in mind that it is fake, that it's not real. I mean, but despite that, Joy and I were sitting here watching this the other night and just laughing our asses off at this. It's just so funny. Meatloaf and Gary Busey. And I'm thinking, and I'm sucked into it. I know that this is all bullshit and I know it's Trump's show and I hate Trump, but I'm going, we're really missing this? Why are we watching this? Because it was just unbelievably strange. It's like tables and they're in this warehouse and there's like acrylic paints spread out on all these individual tables and they're supposed to do some sort of artwork and there's some douchebag in a cowboy hat in the middle of it and Meatloaf starts freaking out at Gary Busey. I mean, it's
a train wreck. It's a car accident.
It really
is.
So here it is.
Yeah.
He's got Meatloaf wandering around looking for his paint.
That ain't good, dude.
Yeah. Are you sure, all and then all that is.
And then
hilarious?
Then in a second he's going to.
Gary, did you buy this paint right here?
Yeah. Why?
Meatloaf is just going to lose his shit.
Another bag.
And you know, all of these shows are put together exactly the same way. They all have those dramatic individual reaction shots. When someone says something, they go to individual close-ups of the other characters reacting with like this stunned look on their face. And then there's a cymbal swell that goes, and then it continues on. And there's some other escalation of the drama. It's all exactly the same. It's unbelievable, but still we get sucked into it.
My stencils and all, a bunch of the crap I bought right in here.
Yeah, Meatloaf is just like wandering around like a caged animal trying to find paint. I mean, it's not like he's just all he's doing is looking for his acrylic paint. It's not like it's some big crisis. And it's not like if Meatloaf doesn't win Celebrity Apprentice that his career is going to be ruined. So there's, I mean, the stakes aren't very high. These guys are all wealthy beyond belief anyway. You know?
Well, the stakes are never, I don't know if you've ever watched Apprentice when it's not Celebrity Apprentice, but I've never given a shit about, I watched the first couple seasons just because it was interesting from a business standpoint, how they applied business, you know, business thinking, MBA style thinking to these challenges. So it was actually pretty interesting, but you never give a shit about the characters. They're all just silver spoon assholes.
Yeah.
People you just want to stab with a prison shiv.
Mm-hmm. So I think
but I don't understand the point of Celebrity Apprentice. I don't get that at all.
No, I don't either. But here we go.
Okay.
What's wrong?
Mother.
What's wrong?
I bought those mother sponges. Part of that paint is mine. I'm sick and tired of you, mother.
No.
That was all mine in my basket. No.
Bull mother.
No, I have to receive.
Hold on, guys. Hold on.
You don't want to make you get it. You don't want to start with me.
Meat, don't do it. Don't do it.
Mother, you do not want to with me. You look in my eyes. I am the last person in the world you ever want to with.
Wow.
Over some sponges and his acrylic paint.
Yeah, that's
normal.
Right.
Yeah.
And so everyone's buying that there, Meat.
And again, Gary Busey is the sane one in that scenario. I mean, in Meatloaf. And they're calling him Meat. You know, hold on, Meat. Don't lose your shit, Meat. Hang on there. You know, which is just so ridiculous. I mean,
Don't do it, Meat. Don't do it.
And again, you know, we're just transfixed by this.
Yeah.
To the point where Donald Trump is asking Meatloaf if he should run for president.
Everybody's saying I should run for president. Let me ask you a question. Meatloaf, should I run for president?
Absolutely.
Yeah. That guy that just had a fucking psychotic meltdown over sponges.
A psychotic fake meltdown over sponges.
Yeah. Yeah. And everybody's like, ooh, watch out. Don't get between Meatloaf and his sponges and his acrylic paints.
Yeah.
Aye.
But back around full circle to that. I mean, you know, today... You know, again, you have day two of the summation of the birther story. Mm. And, you know, Dylan Radigan was on MSNBC suggesting that there are pro wrestlers on both sides of the birther issue. I mean,
Pro wrestlers?
Yeah. Pro wrestlers is Dylan Radigan's terminology for crazy people. People who are inflammatory.
Oh, Dylan Radigan, you're so clever.
But, you know, but on both sides, I cannot understand how, and you know it's great because Rachel Maddow was actually ripping into this the other night, where Rachel was commenting on the both sides meme. It was brilliant. She was saying there is no both sides. You know, if I was like a lot of other people on cable, I'd be saying that, you know, there were weirdos on both sides.
Yeah.
And then Dylan Radigan goes on the same network. I don't think Dylan Radigan watches Rachel, but if he did, he would never continue to perpetuate this because she did such a great job of shaming them.
Yeah.
It's been a banner several weeks for Rachel Maddow.
I mean, really, she's had a lot to work with.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you saw this story about Katherine Ferguson Academy.
Mm-mm.
But it was unbelievable. I mean, you want to talk about a heartbreaking story on one hand, and at the same time, a story that will enrage you and underscore how remarkably awful Tea Party Republican governing is. That's the Katherine Ferguson Academy story. We'll get to that right after we talk about Bubble Genius, because we're way late, and I know you
are
in a hurry. So we're going to talk about some soap here. Mother's Day is coming up. Make sure to order your soap and all of your Mother's Day gift products from Bubble Genius. Ship it to mom, and she will love it. I guarantee you, this is the best soap. It smells lovely. There's a shape of and style and scent of soap for every occasion. Every different kind of soap imaginable. I strongly recommend, get your mom some hibiscus soap. Just order a bunch of the hibiscus soap. It is the best, literally the best hand soap I've ever touched and ever actually used to wash my hands. I love this soap from BubbleGenius.com.
I know you do.
So you've got a variety of soap products at Bubble Genius, specifically for mom. They've got you can get the soap for squares, traditional heart-shaped hand soap. You can get traditional round facial soap. You can get soap for squares, traditional triangular bath soap. And each one is so intricately designed. I mean, when you say genius, the genius part of Bubble Genius is really the operative part of the title Bubble Genius, because it is really brilliant. I mean, you could spend an hour just going through and seeing all the different kinds of soap and what they are able to do with soap. The sculpting in and of itself. I mean, even if it smelled terrible, which it does, it smells great. But even if it smelled terrible, the artistry that goes into these soaps is absolutely brilliant. You can also get
good soap.
Fresh Picked Suds Flower Soap. It's a gift pack of soaps in five. I don't see any hibiscus soap in that, but that's okay. There's other kinds of flowers appropriate for springtime, Mother's Day, May type spring flowers. Fresh Picked Suds straight from the soap to your tub, straight from Bubble Genius to your bathtub. A selection of pretty flower soaps and a host of delicate floral scents. It travels in a cute little reusable vinyl bag. Well, there you go.
I'm the gay one.
And every week I'm talking about my favorite hibiscus soap. So I guess, you know. Bubble Genius brings you soap and body products like you've never seen before. They've got something for everyone, from guys to girls to kiddies to expectant mothers, to Mother's Day gifts too, and even your best friend, your dog, and they even have a few things for your home. Decorative soap, body products, fragrances, pet products, and political poodoo dolls, which are lots of fun.
Which is how we got started with them in the first place. They make political soaps that you can scrub your taint with.
That's right. Bubble Genius strives to be good to your skin while also be good to the planet. Most of their packaging is recyclable. I'm trying to get this done for you.
I know. Goddamn it. Hurry up.
They source their ingredients as close to home as possible, thereby supporting other local and domestic businesses while cutting down on fossil fuel consumption. Good deal with gas prices so high. By not having stuff shipped from across the globe, they do their best to use organic ingredients when they're accessible and affordable. And their soaps are free of chemical detergents and surfactants.
It's
pure products. Pure genius. Bubble Genius at BubbleGenius.com.
The Bob and Elvis Show.
Indeed. So, what are we going to talk about here? Oh, yeah. The Katharine Ferguson Academy. So, there's this public school in Detroit.
Is that anything with vampires?
No. It's not a school for vampires. It's not a school.
Hot Catholic girls turning into vampires?
Yeah, no. It's not like Dr. Xavier.
I've already lost interest.
I'm sorry. But it's a school
werewolves? Are there any werewolves?
No, just it's a school for pregnant teens in Detroit.
Oh, fuck, is it really?
Yeah.
A school for pregnant like they get sent off by their Quaker parents as a shame school?
No, it's actually it's a public school in the Detroit school system.
Oh, and there is a Detroit school system?
There actually is. There's still one. It still exists for now.
It's in a Band-Aid.
Right. And so, you know, as I'm sure you're aware, it's not an easy thing for a pregnant teen to get through school.
It's not?
They're ostracized. They're made fun of. And what this school does is it gives them a place where they can feel comfortable, a place where they can learn, where they can get a solid education. There's support. Specifically designed for people who are pregnant, and so they have gardens and they learn trades, and there's I think the turnover rate as far as Katharine Ferguson Academy students going to college, like 90% of the student body ends up in being placed in college, which is just unbelievable. What a great advantage for inner city Detroit students, pregnant teens, to actually get a real education and to actually build a future. This is an invaluable public commodity.
And teabaggers have some sort of fucking problem with it because it's pregnant chicks.
Well, no. The thing is, there's this Michigan law, this emergency manager law, emergency financial manager law, where if a certain municipality is in financial distress, the governor can dissolve that municipal government and replace it with one guy who the governor appoints. And the governor is Rick Snyder, a Republican, a teabagger, a Tea Party Republican. Oh, sure. And he's appointing an emergency financial manager who, in this case, in the case of Detroit, this guy has lots of friends who are in the charter school system. They are going to go in. They're going to shut down Katherine Ferguson Academy and sell it off to the highest bidder, some charter school.
Yeah.
That will probably make it very
privatize
difficult.
Privatize it and turn it into a
privatize football. It. That's right. So not only are they, what they're doing is broadly in Michigan, and Rachel Maddow is calling this ground zero for American politics, Michigan. And it really, really is, because it underscores how the Tea Party Republicans want to govern. And they say, they claim they're against big government, but what they do is they pass laws in which the governor of the state can dissolve local municipal governments and replace them and then and use an emergency financial manager to sell off all of the public assets. In Benton Harbor, they're selling off public land to golf courses, for example. I mean, they dissolved the local government of Benton Harbor, and the emergency financial manager is selling all the assets,
awesome.
The public assets.
This is how capitalism.
Exactly. And so when Rachel did this story, you're like, oh, wow, what a great school. Where pregnant women in their teens can go and get a high school education and then get placed into college and actually have a future for themselves. And then the story kicks you right in the balls and says the governor, Rick Snyder, this Tea Party Republican, appointed an emergency financial manager, and the emergency financial. This school is set to close in, I believe it's June. Oh, and it gets worse. The students who love their school staged a sit-in to keep the school from being sold off and closed.
Big pregnant girls.
Big pregnant girls. High school students staged a peaceful sit-in. You know what happened? Rick Snyder had them all arrested and taken off to prison.
Oh, sweet.
So there's videotape, and Rachel had it, of these pregnant teens being hauled off at the behest of an allegedly pro-life Republican,
pregnant pro-life, teen, pro-small government,
bringing
in fucking jackbooted SS thugs to round up the peaceful demonstrators who are pregnant.
Yeah,
and I would imagine mostly African American. Correct?
They love fetuses so much that they arrest pregnant teens. And throw them
into jail. That's their deal. Destroy every mechanism of society that could help prevent ridiculous, you know, early pregnancy and infant mortality and all, you know, all these things. Cut all of that off and just hope to God that Jesus comes down and takes care of it all. Because that's the only thing that will after they've gutted every social service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's
what they do. That's what they do. They don't care. Do you think these Republicans actually care about the abortion issue or about fetuses or about pregnant mothers? They don't care. All they care about is securing the vote of the people who do. Because that's, I mean, again, to take this all back full circle, the Republicans are all about superficial nonsense, cosmetic horse shit.
But it's not working anymore. It's going to stop working. I mean, the untuned in people are starting to sniff that bullshit, and another political generation, another cycle or two, all of that crap will be done. All of these bullshit wedge issues and social, no one is interested in that anymore. And it's going to take a poppy. What they haven't found yet is, I mean, what they're really grasping for right now, and I think it's behind the Donald Trump phenomenon, is that Sarah Palin has failed them as an effective populist candidate. They need someone, because their platform, such as it is such horseshit, because it is such bumper sticker, sideshow, freak show, carnival stuff. Mm-hmm. That it needs a big-headed, ridiculous, populist nut to carry that around. And Trump doesn't even seem to realize that he is that thing. And that's why they're flailing so badly now. I mean, because they're not – in this cycle and probably the next, they're not going to lock on to policy. It's going to be this fucking freak show carnival barker thing. And they just have yet to find an effective populist machine to carry that around. Sarah Palin is just so fucking retarded that she can't even be an effective populist candidate, you know?
Yeah.
She's just a giant parody of herself now. And that's sad. I mean, because populist candidates are, you know, Huey Long, they're usually just cartoon characters. But they're so effective. I mean, Hitler was a populist candidate. I mean, it's all about nationalism and hating brown people and hating you pointing a finger at anybody you can to blame your hardship on, right? Sarah Palin's such a giant failure at that no one – they can't even rally behind her. So yep. God help us if one comes along that they can really get behind, because that's when it gets scary. Well, when you have a real cult of personality, you know, like they tried to accuse us of being for Barack Obama, you know, the Obama bots and all that horseshit.
Yeah, see, we care about policy. This is Sarah Palin, though. I mean, Sarah Palin just has thrown off any effort, any pretense that she might be any sort of serious candidate for anything. Because this week she was she was on Fox News screeching at the media for making curious Americans sound crazy.
Yeah.
She was chastising the media for making birthers sound crazy.
Yeah.
In other
yeah.
words,
like it's the media's fault.
Yeah, she's defending the birthers. And then she said, and then she threw this in.
Bill Ayers thing?
Yeah, you know, perpetuating this ridiculous conspiracy that Bill Ayers ghost wrote one or both of the president's books.
Yeah. Yeah. From the queen of ghostwritten books.
Yeah. Who can't even write her own Facebook posts.
Right.
Who has her Facebook posts ghostwritten.
Right.
She's got a problem. But if you know, that has everything to do with it has two things. It has the president's a moron, can't write his own book. Two, president pals around with domestic terrorists.
Yeah. It's just all towards legitimacy. That's all this is about, is legitimacy. If he didn't write his own books, he's illegitimate. Because who's ever heard of a black guy that could write a book like that?
Yeah.
Or two. Never mind that all of this, all you have to do is sit and watch this man to debunk all of that. Like every time I go to Amazon.com or something, I'm scrolling through what's hot and what's not and whatever. There's that Dinesh D'Souza book called the Roots of Obama's Rage. Mm-hmm. And you're like, what rage are you talking about? You fucking psycho.
Yeah.
This is the least rage-filled person I've ever seen in politics.
Yeah.
And yet you can get away with a book called The Roots of Obama's Rage? What, just watch the man for 2 seconds. He's the king of – he's ice. He's fucking Iceman. And they can just – because they say it, they just get away with it. Oh, he couldn't have written a book because listen to how he talks.
Well, that's
– great.
I mean, what the press doesn't understand at this point yet, and hopefully they will. I'm holding out some sort of – maybe it's naive hope, but I'm still holding out hope that eventually they will put two and two together and begin to recognize that the modern Republican Party, modern conservatives, are not to be taken seriously. There is no difference between what Paul Ryan is saying about the budget and about Medicare as to what Donald Trump is saying about the president's birth certificate. It's all made up bullshit. They are just making it up because all they want to do – is just tell people what they want to hear. And they're doing something. They're just flailing around.
Yeah.
But
they're in their flailing. They're looking for someone to carry that water for them. They've yet to find it. A serious candidate. And the fact that there are people out there, like that recent video of Tea Party tax day protest or something, where everyone was dead serious about Trump. I mean, that's frightening that there are people that clueless to just buffoonery, that they're that politically unsavvy to think that that's in any way serious. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
I don't blame the Republicans for being that, because that's the politician is crafted by the constituency. Mm-hmm. There would be no Barack Obama if there wasn't a liberal intelligentsia, you know, armies of people like us who got behind that shit and loved it. But not in a cult of personality way, just like, oh, look, a guy that can form cohesive sentences and has a fucking constitutional law thing going on. And oh, look, you know, they've yet to find that their politicians are shaped by the constituents. And these constituents are fucking retarded.
Yeah.
Retards. Just no business being in politics. And that's the base.
Yeah.
That's their base. Their most motivated voters, the primary voters, are the most insane.
Yeah.
And my God. Whereas ours tend to be the most lucid and policy driven.
Yeah. I mean, policy driven to a fault. We're almost too wonky. Yeah. I mean, we're almost.
Oh, we're too. Yeah, absolutely. To the point where we're just ineffectual at doing anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, when I went to the local, you know, for the first time in 2008, Nebraska had a caucus instead of just a straight primary, right? We had a caucus and nobody knew what the fuck was going on. And just normal citizens appeared in this crowd at this caucus, this totally disorganized clusterfuck. And just normal citizens, normal democratic people turned up and started talking policy in separate camps. So the Clinton, Hillary people over there and the Obama people over there. And I was stunned. I was absolutely blown away by just the citizen political machine going on. And that's when I walked into that caucus not knowing who I was going to caucus for. That's the day because the Obama camp was so on the ball.
Yeah.
Whereas the Hillary camp was, well, she's a woman. She deserves it. I was like, that's not doing it for me. Wonky to a fault.
Yeah.
And just impressed the shit out of me. Right. That's why I voted for Brockham. I mean, that's why I got in that camp. And then I eventually became a delegate and went to my state convention. Mm-hmm. It's where I met Ted Sorensen.
Meanwhile, the Republicans are all about buffoonery.
They're just professional buffoons.
As soon as the media, right, treats all of the Republican Party in the same way they're treating birthers, until that time, and, you know, in the meantime, they're doing the both sides bullshit.
Yeah.
Until they start treating the Republicans like the unserious buffoons they are, they're going to continue to, as I like to quote John Stewart, they're going to continue to hurt America.
Yeah.
Because if you give buffoons an equal platform to serious people, then that's 50% of the ball game. That's like honoring buffoonery. That's like saying that buffoonery has an equal place on the stage as actual, you know, serious policymaking.
And it's not even that. That's raising the bar too high. Just normal, not buffoonery. Just sane sanity.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't even compare what our side's doing to that. It's just the opposite of that is just plain sanity. Just a normal guy that goes to work and tries to do some good. This buffoonery is beyond. It should have been the top of the page above the fold news every day for a week that Eric Cantor and those jackasses wanted to pass a law that said, if we can't come to a, if we can't all agree, then we win by default. Should have been there should be civics books coming off the press right now saying in 2011 Eric Cantor lost his fucking mind and went completely crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no one gives a shit. Oh, well, man. It's like arguing with Orly Tate. Well, let me just show you this. Look at what Obama did with this. Buffoonery.
There's no difference between Donald Trump asking Meatloaf whether he should run for president and Eric Cantor proposing that ridiculous law. It's all equally insane.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. And the opposite of that isn't, oh, look at this liberal. It's just sanity. It's just that's why it gets all the media play it does, because sane politics, sane policy is boring and not worthy of pointing a camera at.
I mean, even Jonathan Alter was on television today saying that, you know, well, you know, by the way, there are crazy people on both sides. Yeah, you find me crazy people on the left who are anywhere near as crazy as the birthers and as widely dispersed into politics. 50%, what is it, 40, anywhere between 45% and 55% of Republican primary voters don't believe the president was born in the United States. That's insane.
That number will come down nary a bit, maybe a couple of points since the long form, and that's, you know,
and there's four people who belong to Code Pink. Like there's four people in code pink.
Exactly.
Right?
There's our crazies.
Yeah.
Goddamn code pinkers.
All five of them. They're just like the birthers, don't you know?
All of us liberals who think that George Bush planned 9/11. Truthers, they're all leftists, they're all liberals.
And that's why I continue to say, this will be the last time I play it, but the Republican Party, in a sentence, right here.
Everybody's saying I should run for president. Let me ask you a question. Meatloaf, should I run for president?
Absolutely.
Right. That's Eric Cantor saying, Congress, can we pass this bill that says this other bill becomes law if we just pass it?
Right. Absolutely.
Doesn't have to, doesn't have to go through the Senate, doesn't have to go to the president. It just becomes law. This is like magic.
Yeah.
Should we do that, Meatloaf?
Absolutely.
They're crazy. They're crazy. I mean, there was a time. There really was a time. I'd like to write a book on this. The evolution of the conservative movement from being policy-driven to PR-driven.
Yeah.
From policy to PR.
Thank Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan. Yeah. It really started in 64.
Yeah.
And that's when they started buying books in bulk to amp up the book sales of conservative writers.
John Birch Society.
Richard Mellon Scaife and all those guys.
Which is why Goldwater just was so ineffectual, because Goldwater himself was not—he gets a bad rap, but he wasn't as bad as people.
Thanks for listening.
Able to carry that water.
Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. You fudge with us. You fudge with the best. We'll be back next week. Take care, everybody.
Meatloaf, bitches.
Absolutely.